Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Wherever you are, this is the Interpreter's Workshop Podcast. I'm Tim Curry, your host. Here we talk everything sign language interpreting. The ins, the outs, the ups, the downs, the sideways of interpreting. If you're a student, a new interpreter, experienced interpreter, this is the place for you. If you want to know more, go to interpretersworkshop.com. Let's start talking interpreting. And now, the quote of the day by Viktor Vishek, artist in light and projection, born in Serbia, living in Hungary. A jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one. In today's episode, Marco discusses whether interpreters should be a jack of all trades or whether we should specialize in one area, one domain of interpreting. We also get to the nitty-gritty of how experience affects our work and a little bit more. Let's get started. Okay, if we connect the assault training idea and we think about how to change the education in general for sign language interpreters, what do we do then with ongoing education? Those who are interpreters already, how do we keep up their skills and improve their skills or add new skills if we have changed the basic education for interpreters?
I think that at the moment, again, because of the need, we become, not automatically, but it is expected at the beginning, and I'm not saying it's necessarily negative. Mm-hmm. We become tautologists, meaning we are interpreted at work in all and every kind of settings. Mm-hmm. Or at least you are expected to, you know, this is the expectation. You are a sign language interpreter. Okay, come to the hospital or come to the court, come to the theater. So you find yourself having to spread your wings and your resources to various settings and domains. Mm-hmm. And I think in the long run, I'm not sure that it's healthy. It's very demanding. It's very stressful. You become, I can't remember now what it is. Yeah. So there is an expression that you are jack of all trades and master of none.
Yes.
Yeah. So in other words, you know a bit of all the possible permutation that you can have in mm-hmm. different settings, but you're not experienced as an interpreter in any of them. Mm-hmm. So in the long run, I personally don't see that as a healthy position to be in. So again, what I mean by that is that training-wise, I think there should be specializations, in other words. So mm-hmm. training that gives you opportunity to specialize in one domain rather than another. So it doesn't mean that you need to stop working in all of them and just do one settings, but you perhaps concentrating that and mm-hmm. then do the others when and if required or appropriate, or if the opportunity of safely work in that environment.
Yeah, that's
what I think would be the best way. There is another point, so perhaps I'm burning bridges, but perhaps there is also different layers, because at the moment in my experience, in the very instant, is that I am, for my personal reason, I am re-registering myself with all the official association and bodies that I am required to rejoin. It's more lengthy than I thought it would be, mm-hmm. and it's okay. However, there is a demand of you having undertaken a number of professional development opportunities mm-hmm. in order to re-register yourself. And I have to say, honestly, I do struggle, because professional development opportunities for a person that had almost 30 years experience, again, it's not being big-headed, but it's at the moment is very lacking. So there is lots of beginner's guide for introductory training course for court. Have you ever thought to work in the police station? Yeah. You know, this type of situation. And I think I've done 5 or 6 of this training. Mm-hmm. And you reach a point where I you cannot stand it anymore. You know, I know that we shouldn't. Should we be okay to go back to the beginning? You know, mix with younger and newer, younger not by age, but by professional experience,
exactly.
Colleagues.
Yeah,
it's fine. But you also need the other side of it, the place where you can, you know, slow down and reflect with colleagues that have similar amount of experience like you, and then reflect on what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
Also, because one thing that I have realized recently is that I've become, and I admit it publicly now on my podcast, that I've become complacent. In other words, things that you did when you were a newer interpreter, just sending your terms and condition, explaining the way we work. And so all that, if someone asks me if I am available, I just respond, yes. What time? You have preparation material? Fine. This is the fee. Thank you. See you then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So I don't send terms and condition. Because you assume if they contact you and they want you, they either know you already or they accept whatever conditions you come with. I'm not saying that, so by any chance, I mean, it's not necessarily right, and it's definitely not right, but I have become complacent and I'm aware of it. But in order to avoid that, then perhaps I might need to be in conversation with other colleagues of how do you avoid complacency, or what type of complacency is kind of acceptable and what type of complacency it's not accept is a no-no.
Yes, yeah? Exactly.
It's a no-go.
Yeah. What you're saying touches many seasoned interpreters. We know which battles are the ones worth fighting. And when it comes to terms and conditions, or having all of the materials at a certain time to prepare, we know from our seasoned experience that what is likely to happen, so we don't worry about those little details that are rarely likely to happen. Rarely likely to happen. That's beautiful.
It works.
That might be something worldwide, is those experienced interpreters still want to have something that accommodates them on the level that they need to improve. We just burned both of our bridges. Okay.
It is nice sometimes to burn bridges this way. Naturally.
Naturally, yeah. Exactly.
Naturally. Just to add, this is a gem that I have said unconsciously, and it was brought back to me by a colleague, so it might be worth sharing. Dear colleague of mine, Marinella, mentioned that I had, and another colleague, Sue, have mentioned two things that they've said. One is that there are different schools of interpreting. One is the very lively representative of the source
material.
Presenter material, exactly, language material, etc., that very absorbent, yeah, of that and reflecting that source language. And the others that tend to minimize that, they're just representative of the content of the material. So I was praising a colleague that I said, amongst my fluffing around, because I was in command of English and I was booked for this job because of my command of English, but I was struggling because of the content, not because of the language. You were the opposite. You were the famous swan. So Marinella, not that Marinella doesn't have good command of English, but she was working with a more precise sentence structure. So she didn't, she knew what she wanted to say, and she said that without fluffing around, without adding embellishment, which sometimes when you're slightly more in command of the language, you tend to add to make sure that it is more palatable or pleasant to listen to. And it's actually sometimes create confusion or detract from the message. So I was really complimenting Marinella. And the other one is a statement that I made to Sue, a colleague, which a colleague of ours came to an event and we had done, and it was deaf to deaf, but there was also very few hearing people. So our interpretation was for this very few hearing people in attendance.
Mm-hmm.
So it was death to death. There was no control over the source message. You couldn't stop them. You couldn't go, what do you mean with that?
Yes.
So it has to, you know, you have to live with it, literally. Anyway, apparently, because there was also text, sign to text, the speech to text,
yes,
in translation in the venue, a deaf person checked that and he was complimenting us. Anyway, another colleague came and he saw that compliment and said, oh, you must have really prepared very hard for it. And there's one of those catty moments that I do not regret. And I turned around and said, yes, 25 years, my dears. It takes 25 years to prepare for this job. So again, it was not planned. I don't know why, but it just came out. So I forgot completely. So Sue, my colleague, reminded me the other day that sometimes it takes long time to prepare for a job. It's not just the material that people send to you as preparation.
It takes 25 years to prepare.
25 years to prepare.
Yeah, okay. There's so much baggage. No,
I know. That's one of those words that could mean so many things. That's why sometimes I like to throw it in and see how it lands.
It's been just over 1 year since I've started this podcast. I don't think that's enough time to prepare, but it's enough time for you to share. Click on the links in the show notes and share the passion of our profession. Thank you. Let's go back.
Okay, so you did a lot of articles and studies, research, but one thing I would like to pull out of you is a couple of topics that you've presented on a few occasions. One of them is the history of interpreting and translation from the Egyptians to modern day. You also researched a little bit or presented about understanding what international sign is.
Yes, the history of interpreting and translation was something that I had access to many years ago, and it was initially presented by a spoken language interpreter. Okay, it was in a spoken language interpreting event. And I thought it was amazing, but I couldn't get hold of the author. So apologies that I cannot refer who the person was, and I couldn't get the material either. So I thought, okay, this must be wonderful. And I know that other people have done it. So why don't I at least do a version of it? I'm sure it's not the same as the individual did, but at least I've tried to replicate that because I remember a number of things from his presentation. So I couldn't acknowledge this individual, but I'm now saying that it's not all mine. I've redone the research. Mm-hmm. So starting from hieroglyph that is representative of this slave that is facing two sides. One is the pharaoh, mm-hmm, and the other one are visiting kings from other countries. Mm-hmm. So it's the same individual. That's why they understood he's dressed the same way and is depicted in the same way. So it's the same person facing two people, you know,
yes,
at the time. So that's why they know is representative of interpretation. So we know that interpretation already existed, you know, from 1,000 years before Christ,
yes.
If we go with that calendar. Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's not a new profession. How it was done, how people did it, how they were educated or trained in it, we don't know.
Sure.
But we know at least that the aristocracy in many different countries didn't think appropriate for them to learn other languages, and therefore there were individuals that translated or interpreted into their language, mm-hmm, to access other visitors or other populations. And then it comes to modern days. So again, it's about spoken languages, but obviously I have inserted within it the history of sign language interpreters that go back to the beginning of time, because deaf people always had access to people that are familiar, that I'm using the words that were recorded. So deaf people used people that are familiar with that way of communicating.
Uh-huh.
That exist in wills that people leaving money to parents and so on, in children or,
mm-hmm,
family members, and in this case, being the deaf person, the recipient of this money, the notary needed to book someone or bring in someone that was familiar with the way of communication that they use. So again, not necessarily an interpreter, but again, people that functioned as interpreters. Yeah. So these are evidences, mm-hmm. historical evidences of this that has happened historically. So even in the Torah, which is the legal book in the Jewish community, mm-hmm. they mention that deaf people can marry it mm-hmm. by using someone that is familiar with their way of communicating. Uh-huh. Again, talking about a few thousand years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So we go back those days. So we existed already. So I'm not sure how much better we are nowadays compared then. Well, I'm joking.
No, of course. We're familiar with the way of communicating, so that's a good thing.
Just to mention international sign, if you really want a brief, my approach to international sign is not to teach necessarily international sign, because I believe that international sign cannot necessarily be taught at a fluency level mm-hmm. required to work with it in a training session. Okay, so I just try to explain that there are two sides to it. One is what is used, is what is being formalized in the century of meetings of the World Federation of the Deaf, of the Deaf Olympics Congress, etc., etc. All these organizations, they are long-standing and they met regularly, and therefore the language is almost formalized. Yeah, so mm-hmm. people need to access it and know it or not. And then there is the international inverted bracket that is used when is a contact language, when an immigrant arrives in your country and doesn't know your sign language and you don't know their sign language, and you have to find a medium. And obviously, there might not be interpreter in that language mm-hmm. in that moment. And therefore, you have to find a way to find contact signs or understood signs that works for both of you. Mm-hmm. And that's, you create the international, again, inverted bracket
yeah.
in that type of situation. So two sides to it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's my point about international sign in my training courses or mm-hmm. presentations.
So it's more about the understanding, getting to the meaning there. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of people have the misunderstanding that because the Gestuno publication, that there is a repository of international sign that you can learn and use. And my intervention is not about that. It's certainly not anymore mm-hmm. about that
yeah.
collection of signs that can be used internationally.
Mm-hmm. Well, another enjoyable episode with Marco Nardi. Let me go over a few main points of today's episode. The first is what Marco mentioned about two schools of thought about interpreting. Some people believe that you should have the full characterization and the content together in your interpretation. The second thought is focus only on the content. And I think in reality, we cannot do one or the other. We have to do a mixture of the two. Because as we work as an interpreter, gain experience, we are filling up our baggage with tools of the trade so that we can work in many different situations and be ready for the twists and turns that we are always seeing. I think it's impossible to focus only on the content, because the content comes from a source, and that source is influencing the meaning of the content. And not just the source, but the target audience, the environment that you're in, all of that context influences the meaning behind the content. Now, I'm not disagreeing with Marco. What he said is true. His point is that sometimes we, as interpreters, tend to try to do everything humanly possible to get everything in our interpretation so that we have the best interpretation. And sometimes trying to do the ultimate best gets in the way of just doing our job. So Marco's reminding us to not pull out each tool in our baggage, but only use what's necessary. Sometimes we're only human. No, wait. We're always only human. But sometimes we make mistakes or get overwhelmed in our work. And that's when we need to pause and remember to just do the interpretation that is needed, not that extra mile that we want to reach, but can't at that moment. The next point is that we have been training interpreters in the emergency crisis situation of assault training, trying to get as many interpreters as we can as fast as possible to meet the demand that is out there. But Marco makes a valid point that we should step back and reevaluate how we're training interpreters. Because right now what's happening is the new interpreters seem to be left behind. They're lacking something. They have not become a well-rounded interpreter from such a short training period. And right now we're trying to fix that with different band-aids of community service, mentoring, extra training. And I think that connects to Marco's comments about experienced interpreters are sometimes having complacency about our ongoing training, because most of the training out there is for general topics or their introductions to different specializations or domains, rather than going deeper to the next level, to the intermediate level, to the advanced level. That is a consequence of the assault training methods that we've been using, because we see the need for more training for those new interpreters. So while I completely agree that we must support those interpreters, we need to remember we need to support those of us who are more experienced. Otherwise, we do become complacent. If you've ever spoken to a teacher of young children, many of them are so happy to speak with adults. Spending a week with children, their vocabulary and the way they speak is for that level, for the children. Just as new interpreters come out of a training program, their level of vocabulary is from that moment. How they talk about the situations is from the examples that they've practiced or that they've read about, that they've seen. For those of us who are more experienced, we should be using vocabulary that is deeper, that is more expansive, with more connections and understanding, rather than speaking at that same level as the new interpreters, because that's what we want them to do as well, to slowly expand and develop their understanding of the profession. This is where Marco is leading us, saying that our education of interpreters needs to go to a deeper level, so that our ongoing education can slowly build on top of that. Should it be specializations? We should have the foundation of interpreting. And then on top of that, each individual interpreter should work where their skills lie and develop those skills in the domains that fit them best. And that brings us to the last point. Preparation is sometimes equivalent to our experience. Experience will give us much more baggage, many more tools that we can reach to when the materials that we studied for this assignment fail us. When the situation calls for something that was unexpected, it's the experience that can step up and help us through. Looking at our history as interpreters, whether it goes all the way back to the Egyptians and beyond, it helps us remember what we're doing. Have we changed so much? Are we better than we were 1,000 years ago? I think we know who we are and what we are better, and that is the first step to improving. Marco has given us another point or two to help us along the way. So keep your baggage calm. Keep interpreting. I'll see you next week. Take care now.